Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us on WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm just great this morning, and I'm very excited to have Bob Wagoner as our guest today.
Yeah, last week we told you that we did a couple shows down in Charleston, and we decided best thing to do, get it straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, and PBS has picked up the show, and they're airing now across the country in different PBS stations, so we'll talk with him about that, but also about his amazing life as an American chef on three continents. Pretty wild stuff. But I want to begin a little closer to home with someone who's, well, not as accomplished as Bob Wagoner, a Michelin star.
There are lots of people not as accomplished as Bob Wagoner.
I'd like to start with one in particular. This appeared in Grub Street, the blog for New York Magazine. And it's this guy, he writes for a college paper.
Well, it's a story in Grub Street about this guy who writes
Jason Bell.
Writes for the Columbia newspaper.
Now, he went out and he reviewed Colicchio and Sons a while back. And now a year later, he's come back and he's reviewed Alex Stupak. Alex Stupak is a pastry chef turned chef with his own restaurant.
Was a pastry chef at WD-50.
WD-50, a great
very
restaurant.
Very highly regarded pastry chef. As a matter of fact, we went to WD-50 just with a bunch of our staff while he was the pastry chef there just to taste the desserts.
We like the desserts best of all.
Frankly, we like the desserts better than the rest of the menu, exactly.
Well, this college student who's a restaurant critic dining at some of the best restaurants in New York, he writes, I'm quoting from Grub Street here, he evidently got an internship for Alex Stupak at his new restaurant.
Well, in the business here, we call it a stagiaire.
Right.
He got an unpaid, usually you do that for a week or you do 10 days, something like that.
Right, and you get to work, in France they do it sometimes for a year, but you go and you work in the kitchen for no money, but to learn what it is that they do there. Well, evidently his didn't earn well, he didn't do very well, and then he went on to review the restaurant where he had been fired from. And I got to tell you,
that's bad form.
As a restaurateur,
that's really bad form.
That's a clear conflict, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're just getting somebody back.
And I
understand that everybody's a critic today, but this, I don't know, this, it's just so clearly wrong on the face of it. It's a guy with a grudge. Here we have, this is from Grub Street. Bell's account of his short-lived internship didn't paint Stupak in the most favorable light. This is Bell quoting Stupak. Why are you here? Why do you want to work here? What are you doing here? All questions Stupak bombarded me with constantly, a look of disgust smeared on his face. You clearly aren't a chef, and Bell claims he was then fired after just one day.
Realize if you were in a restaurant and you looked like you didn't care about the food or you didn't care about what you were doing, you just weren't doing a very good job. That's exactly what I would say. Why are you here? Why are you working for free in my restaurant?
No, or why are you working for pay?
In order to get nothing out of it. What's the point? Why don't you try your hardest and actually get something out of it?
So obviously when he got there, he was doing something or had an attitude, and I think the attitude is clear by the rest of the article, that Stupak didn't like. So you go into a chef's kitchen, the chef didn't like something about you and says, why are you here? Sometimes that's to get you to answer the question and think about it yourself. Should you be here? Maybe you can. I've seen people turn around when being said, no, mediocre is not good enough. No, imperfect is not good enough.
And one of the things he writes is, and I felt like he wanted me to quit. What I want is if you don't want to be there,
right.
I want you to leave.
Right.
Especially if you're a stagiaire, especially if you're an intern.
If you're not jazzed about being there and dedicated to being there.
I want the people in my kitchen to really want to excel, to really want to be there. And if you don't want to be there, I don't want you there.
Okay, so check this out. So before we get to the review, this comes from Grub Street again. Let's pull another bit from Bell's account of his harrowing night interning at WT50 under Stupak, right? Stupak took one look at me after I had admitted my lack of training and my school as Columbia and my profession as clumsy and novice writer and wrote me off as useless, an utter waste of his time considering WD-50's pastry menu. And then he writes, Stupak seemed obsessed with forcing me to quit from menial and repetitive labor, and this is in parentheticals, picking perfect lemon thyme leaves off the stem for 2 hours, to verbal attacks, Funny how someone, this is, he's quoting Stupak, saying, funny how someone can do logarithms, has no common sense in the kitchen after I had grabbed a pint container instead of a quart container.
By the way, if you grab a pint container instead of a quart container in a kitchen, you don't have common sense in a kitchen.
Okay. And to make it to cleaning, and more cleaning, my night of service wasn't even that far from the ordinary stagiaire experience. Hello. It's Coach Charlie Sheen. What do you think a stagiaire does?
You've never worked in a kitchen before. Should I have you butchering the ducks?
It's your first day. And he's like picking perfect lemon thyme leaves off the stem for 2 hours. Who do you think does that? The sous chef? And why do you think you're qualified to do anything? When you've done that for a couple of days, then maybe you can prove that you can go to something else. You're insulted that someone would ask you. But this is the same guy who, when he goes to the restaurant, screams that everything's not perfect.
Exactly. Well, that's the irony here is this is a guy who pans the restaurant in a review a year later. But, you know, you're complaining that you had to make sure that the leaves that you picked were perfectly shaped. Well, if you want everything to be perfect,
who's going to do that?
Who does it? The low guy on the totem pole.
And
guess what? The guy who's never worked in a restaurant before and it's his absolute first day needs to do something where he can't do a lot of damage because you don't even know the difference between a pint container and a quart container.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because maybe the reason your dish didn't taste better when you didn't like your dish when you got there is some idiot in the kitchen put in a quart of something instead of a pint of something into the soup and it didn't turn out all right. I don't even
understand.
A quart
of salt is a lot more than a pint of salt.
Talk about a self-important brat, Jason Bell. Joshua Bell is actually quite a great violinist.
He's self-important for a good reason.
he's actually quite humble, if you think about it. But Jason Bell, I don't even understand the hubris which this young brat walks into a kitchen and can't even see the idiotic moronicness. I've made up a new word.
Moronicness, I think, qualifies as something a moron would say.
So you walk into a restaurant and you're upset that they're really punishing you to do menial labor and making sure it's perfect and making sure everything's clean, 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 clean. And then you're
Did you want to work in? Did you want to eat in the dirty, 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 dirty restaurant?
I don't even understand it. Well, it turns out this idiot also in March of 2010 had reviewed Tom Colicchio. Now, look, Restaurant Critics, Gail Green, the great restaurant critics,
Ruth Reichel.
These people knew a lot about food. You're a Columbia student who doesn't realize that the stagiaire is the guy who picks the perfect leaves off the stem. Mm-hmm. And the guy who cleans, sometimes for weeks and years. And you know what else? That's how you get good. And that's how a restaurant gets good. And that's how you become a good professional. And, you know, that's just it, you brat. What the hell do you know? So you obviously don't know anything about food or how a restaurant works. So here's what he writes about Colicchio and Sons. And by the way, I had two meals at Colicchio and Sons. And I've had two meals at Colicchio and Sons in the last year. One where they knew who I was and they came out and said, and one where they had no idea who I was, that we weren't friends and family. Fabulous, fabulous dinner. Really great. But here are some of
Yeah, but that doesn't make really good writing. You can't write a really interesting story about it being fabulous, can you, Francis?
Well, you know, all I'm saying is maybe this guy got a bad meal when he was there, but I don't trust his taste at all. Here's what he says about Colicchio. He says, tragically, Colicchio placidly pushes out overpriced, grotesque food that merely embarrasses the admittedly inflated top chef name. Bell's complaints are very specific. He finds the gnocchi a bit gummy, okay, goes a step further, and grittiness on the palate constitutes the most severe problem with this dish, and he suspects that Colicchio's morals only got a brief rinse in the kitchen. Amazingly, this is from Grubsheet again. Finally, Bell wonders how much longer Colicchio can continue this schizophrenic charade before he packs away his knives and rooster paintings for good.
I'm going to bet a really long time. My guess is a really long time.
I wonder who's going to be in the food business longer, Jason Bell or Tom Colicchio? You know, who's your money on, Mark?
I'm going to go with Colicchio, but maybe just by a little bit.
Oh, my God.
40, 50 years. The lesson here is if you don't know what the hell you're talking about, just because you can put it on a blog or just because you can put it in print doesn't make it true. And the people who know, it actually makes you everything else you write from that point forward less believable. And in this case, for me, it was backwards because I read the Alan Stupak review in Grub Street before I went back and started researching more about this,
right.
this guy. And what happened was I said, oh, who's this guy? He staged for a day, and then he panned the restaurant a year later after getting fired after staging for a day. Who is this guy? And then I went back and read a little bit more, and I went, oh, he's a clown.
Right. Total clown, idiot, moron. And I read, I read the Colicchio piece, and I thought, oh, well, you know what? It sounds like he got a bad meal. You know, any restaurant, sooner or later, you're going to get a bad meal. It's going to be an off day. Something went wrong. And then I read the Stupak piece, and just writing about what does he think a stagiaire position is.
Right. Took all his credibility away. And if he had any credibility to begin with, took it all away.
Right. And then, so he doesn't even know what a stagiaire position is and should be, and I don't know what the hell he was expecting. And then once you have been fired from a place and there's obviously bad blood, you don't say, you know what, I'm going to recuse myself from publishing a review about this place. There's some bad blood here. I hate the guy, so I'm really not going to write a restaurant. And
exactly.
So it's a shame that a guy like this even has a forum. But he does, but we got a forum too, so I'll put my forum against this forum. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment with a real chef, Bob Wagoner, and you're listening to Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. And our very special guest today is Chef Bob Wagoner. Bob owned his own restaurant, Le Monte Cristo in Burgundy. He was chef for many years at the Charleston Grill in Charleston, South Carolina. He's a James Beard Award winner. And his new show on PBS across the country is You Cook with Chef Bob.
Hey, Bob. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys?
It's going great. In the spirit of full disclosure, we have to admit that before we invited you on our show, you invited us on your show. And all of the media personalities out there who want to get on our show, invite us on your show and maybe you'll get on. It's a pretty good strategy.
That's a good way to work it. And you guys were great. We had so much fun. But I'm gonna cut you off one second. I never did win that freaking James Beard thing. I was nominated 4 times. But never did win the thing. So maybe with the show I'll win it one day.
I was going to say, maybe for best TV show, Bob.
Note to self.
Yeah, who knows? You do what you can, right?
And we're actually putting out an ad now for a new researcher for the show. We need a new intern. It would be you can apply at restaurantguysradio.com. Sorry about that. Well, the show was a tremendous amount of fun, and Mark and I actually flew down to South Carolina last fall to shoot one episode, and you liked it so much you asked us to stay for a couple more. And we had a great time, and I'd never been to Charleston before, a great city, and I do want to talk about all that, but I think one of the things that's really compelling about your story, and something I'd never heard before, you're an American chef who went over to France and you didn't go and stage in a bunch of different restaurants and then come back to New York and try and open a restaurant or go back to Charleston and start to open a restaurant. You opened your own restaurant as an American in Burgundy. How did that go?
I'll tell you, it wasn't easy. I left when I was 20 thinking I'd spend a year learning how to cook and came back 11 years later with a French wife and a daughter born in Bonn. So that was part of it. I honestly became half French. I mean, after 11 years, it was just... I love the people. I love the attitude. Even my first year there, I knew I would go back again. I knew I would just spend the time because, I was a 20-year-old kid working in Hollywood. I was working at Trump's in West Hollywood at the time. And it was just, it was a great restaurant. It was a great time for L.A. Back then it was L.A. restaurants, New York restaurants, and that was it. So there was a huge competition between the superstars. It was Wolfgang Puck with Ma Maison or... How do we do 250 covers for lunch? We do 180 tea, and then we break down, clean up, and then we do 250 people for dinner, and there'd be 6 cooks. And then, and we'd be hiring guys from the CIA and from Culinary Institute and from Johnson Wales and all these places, and I had no formal training at all, and I see these guys that, they knew things that I didn't, and I'm thinking, well, maybe I should go to one of these schools. And then I found out that the CIA was $37,000 in 1980, and that's pretty much what my dad was making a year. And
right.
So that wasn't going to happen. So the chef said, you know what, prove to me you can learn a little French. I took some classes in junior college and failed those. Teacher took me aside and said, Bob, this really isn't for you. You might want to do something else. And I said, look, I get home at 1:30 in the morning. Your class is at 7. I come every day. I have no idea what you're talking about. I listen to these stupid, boring tapes, bien sûr, avec plaisir, on my way to work every day for 8 months. And I gotta tell you, after 11 years in France, I never heard a Frenchman say, bien sûr, avec plaisir. Which is kind of funny, and it actually means, you know, why surely, with pleasure. I mean, it's just not something that the French say.
You know, it's kind of like, I remember...
Because they don't do that much with pleasure.
I'm going to repeat to someone who leveled a criticism at culinary schools. I'm not necessarily endorsing it. I'm going to distance myself from it. But it was funny because a friend of mine who's very much against the culinary school model has said... you know, culinary school is where you go for them to teach you sauces that no one makes anymore. So you were taking a French class where they taught you French that no one speaks anymore.
Exactly. So anyway, he let me hang out in the back. I said, never ask me any questions. Let me just sit in the back. I'm going to leave halfway through the class anyway. I'm going to France. I'm going to try, if I can get three sentences, two phrases, and a couple words out of this entire class, I'll be a better man going into the kitchen. And the chef found me a job in Burgundy in Bouillon, this small village of 150 cows and 37 people. And there was a young chef. I was 20. The chef was 23. He had a sous chef who was my age, who was 20, and two apprentices that were 15. So he was really excited that there's this kid from Hollywood that he doesn't have to pay. He just has to give a room in the village to and feed a little bit every now and then. And this kid's going to work for a year for him for free. And I was leaving a restaurant where we broke down, you know, seven salmon, you know, 20 racks of lamb, you know, 10, 15 fillets for dinner service in an hour and a half. So we're coming to this place where we're doing 12 lunches and 22 dinners in this tiny little village. And I can break down stuff. I can clean stuff. I don't understand what anybody's talking about. But I get what's going on, and I'm here to learn and really find the finesse of what, you know, what France is all about. And the chef would just, we became really good buddies, and he loved the fact that I was there just, you know, just cranking it out, and hated the fact that his young apprentices, we were in the kitchen one morning, funny story, and the student and I didn't really get along that well. He was kind of jealous that I knew how to do things a little bit faster, but it was what it was. I wasn't trying to prove anything. I was just trying to help everybody. So we kind of butted at the beginning, and then the chef came in and he says, well, who do you in France, Bob? And I said, I will know. I know Trois Gros. I know Bocuse. I know Alain Chapelle. And the apprentices had no idea who these guys were, didn't know who Paul Bocuse was in France. And the chef was just completely blown away. This American kid from Hollywood knew all this stuff. And about 3 months into it, the sous chef's laughing at me because I have my little Susie Homemaker, you know, the American peeler.
Yeah.
It kind of wanders back and forth. The little metal thing that you know your mom's got in her kitchen at home.
Right.
So they're laughing at me because the French use an économe, which is this ridiculously stupid peeler that doesn't work well, but it's what, you know, Pablo Cruz was upon, so that's what everybody uses. So we're in the kitchen, and he's just really making fun of my little Susie Homemaker peeler. And then the 15-year-old kids are laughing. Then the wife comes in. And then the waiters are around, and everybody's laughing. And I'm going, okay, here. So I hold up my peeler, and I look at the chef. I said, oh, here's mine. And I give the sous chef, here's his little économe. I point to him. I say, you look at your watch. You get a carrot. I get a carrot. And we do it, and I said, go. And I just whip through my carrot in, like, 3 seconds flat. And he's trying to peel it and chip and some stuff. And I put my peeler down, set it down, walked out in the back of the kitchen, just said, yes. Just tore it up with my sister. And it was just, and then we were friends from then on. It was those crazy things. And that chef found me a job. He got into the winter season, and the chef said, you know what, Bob? You really should go see my friend who lives in Beaune, and he's got a 1-star Michelin restaurant. We're going to get slow in the winter. Nobody comes out to the village, you know, in the wintertime. You should see what he does with the birds and game and rabbit, and, you know, wild hare and things like that. You really, if you want to, I'll get you a job at his place. So I went and worked with him for 4 months through the winter, and it was a completely different kitchen. So completely different learning experience. I mean, this guy, we chopped shallots for each sauce to order.
Oh, wow.
He didn't believe that shallots should be chopped ahead of time. Actually, that kind of thing. It was, you can imagine we did 12 covers. It was like we did 190 on a Monday night with, you know, one of the cooks sick in Trump's. And at the end of 4 months with him, both the chefs got together, and they said, Bob, we're taking out to dinner before you go back to L.A. So they take me to Jacques Lemelois in Chenyi in Burgundy, one of the only 3-star Michelin restaurants there at the time. We go into the kitchen beforehand to meet the chef, and we ate some of the most amazing food. And the sommelier, of course, came over. And when two chefs go out, it's a, you know, two other local chefs, a 1-star Michelin, and the other guy had just been starting out, so he didn't have any stars yet. one of those amazing evenings. And at the end of the evening, the chef came out and they said, Jacques, we've got something we need to ask you. And, we want Bob to come here and work for you next year for free. Any sort of, if you know French, he says, not a problem. I'll pay him. And he gives the motion of like a slingshot, which is, a lance-pierre in French. And it's kind of a silly French saying that's perfect. I'll pay him with a slingshot, which means I'm not going to pay him shit, but if he wants to come and work for me, I'd love to have the guy. So came back and I said, how did you guys work that out? I said, it's easy. We just spent 5,000 francs. Exactly.
You know?
And at that point, just said, I gotta come back. I mean, this is still too much fun. I mean, what am I going to do in L.A.? What am I going to do? I'm 21, and
I want to point out something here. Sort of the old school way of doing things. You just talked about how you went somewhere to work for free for them in exchange for room and board for a year, and then you were excited to be invited to work for someone else for free for another year.
But Bob said something I think that's really relevant. He chose to go work for free rather than pay $37,000 a year for school at the time.
Right.
Okay. Well, was he going to make $37,000 a year working at this restaurant?
Right. I mean, right.
To me, you got a free education during those 2 years.
And the education was much more relevant and practical and real life restaurant. Anyway, so continue with your narrative. I'm enjoying this great deal.
So anyway, so at the end of that, at the end of my stay there, I said, wow, you know what, I honestly love to come back again. I've sold my car to my dad, my furniture to my sisters, and I have nothing. My girlfriend broke up with me after the first year, just saying, I can't wait anymore. I'm not going to, that's not going to happen. So I had no ties. I had nothing going on. And so I'd go back to Trump's in West Hollywood. I'd make $500 as quick as I could, and that would keep me for a year. I could live a year in France on $500, especially back then it was like 10 francs to the dollar.
Yeah.
Americans flourished France. You could eat at a three-star Michelin restaurant for like $50.
Yep.
So it was huge. And 90% of the restaurants, of course, I'm the only American guy in the kitchen, and every time something comes back, it's, oh, that guy wants it well done, or that guy wants the sauce on the side, or she wants her vinaigrette on that salad, on her other salad. So anytime any of that stuff came back, it was like, oh, another American. But
was it most of the time actually Americans?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I got to interject the one funny story. Mark and I were at, where were we? We were at Ducasse. We were dining in Paris.
I don't know what story you're going to tell, so I can't tell you where we were.
We were in Paris and we were having lunch with our friend Jorge. And the table next to us, we could just hear that them talking, and they're definitely Americans. And it wasn't that we were enjoying the whole French experience. Turns out, halfway through lunch, they're Americans from New Jersey. And we wound up having a discussion through half our meal with Americans from New Jersey. And Mark,
I think we were at Ducasse.
And Mark is leaning over to me saying, I came all the way to Paris, I'm at Alain Ducasse to talk to people from New Jersey. That was not the plan. That was not the plan. I can do that in East Brunswick. Well, what are you doing? But they were nice enough, but it really did compromise the experience. Anyway, go ahead.
Too fun. So anyway, so at the end of that stint, I said, you know what, this is now my French, at least my kitchen French is really good. Don't let me, I can't go buy underwear or pay for a stamp on my postcard home to my mom, but kitchen French, I'm pretty damn good. I understand what's going on.
I got to live there for a little while, and I used to call it Tarzan French.
Why?
I go hungry now.
I'm going to use that. I love that. and then they say, bien sûr, avec plaisir.
No, you say, bien sûr, avec plaisir.
Exactly. So anyway, I meet up with the first chef that Jean-Pierre Silva, who has been my buddy ever since now, and was really excited of what I'd been doing. And I mean, I'd get up and go to the market with the chef. And the one good thing that people don't understand, I mean, I guarantee you, at the end of the month, it was tough because they'd get paid monthly and they'd walk around. The wife would walk around and give everybody a little envelope. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm spending the afternoons cleaning fish because nobody else wants to, but I want to. I'm doing croissants in the morning with this guy because I don't know how to make croissants. Who knows how to make that? I want to help make that. And there was a side of me that it was definitely tough because I was spending more and way more time. And the chef saw, and the sous chef had seen that also. But still, at the end of the month, I'm going, they'll give me 50 francs or something. I'll be able to buy beer or go to the disco with everybody on Saturday night or something like that. Nothing. done. And I'm thinking, you know what? But the one thing, I'm going to the market with the chef, because the chef sees what I'm doing, and the other guys are pissed. And I'm spending a month in the fish department, a month in the meat department, 2 months in the vegetable department, a month in pastry, whereas everybody else, some cooks would actually spend like 3 years in the vegetable section before they got to move on somewhere else. So you can think, wow, how much is this worth or what is it? But I actually got to do a lot of things that other guys didn't get a chance to do. So I sat down with the first chef, Jean-Pierre, and I said, look, I want to come back next year. And he says, Bob, now, where you are now, what you've done now, you take the Michelin guide, you pick where you want to go, and I will personally call the chefs, and I guarantee you everyone will take you. And at that point, there was a wine merchant from Savigny-les-Bon who was just coming in, young guy, he was our age, and he said, Bob, I was just at this place in Saint-Étienne, and the guy, just this upcoming chef, they do like 30 lunches and 30 dinners. He's a really neat guy. If you want me to, I'll ask him if you can come work for him. And I'm saying, oh, great, that'd be perfect, to be able to, you know, come back next year, so 3 months from now, go make my $500, came back, and that was Pierre Gagnaire.
Oh, my God.
At his first... In his first restaurant, where he literally, I mean, there was six cooks, and we do 30 lunches and 30 dinners in this old mining town. And they've got a joke from Saint-Étienne that even the crows fly upside down when they go over Saint-Étienne so they don't have to look at it.
But the guy you met was kind of right. Pierre Gagnaire was kind of up and coming.
Oh, my God. Just for those listening in the audience who don't know, Gagnaire in Paris is a Michelin three-star restaurant. I've had some of the best meals of my life there.
It is spectacular.
It's right on the top of the Champs-Élysées. And Mark, we've dined there together. Have we dined there together?
Yes.
And Mark and I have dined there together, and I've gone back. It's amazing, and the guy is Basque. So this is yet another culinary style that you're exposed to.
Yeah, 100%. And just and a complete, honestly, a freak at the time for France, because he had one Michelin star back then. I mean, this was Saint-Étienne in 1985. He would stand in the middle of the kitchen, and there was five of us, you know, five cooks, and that was it. And he would just hold his head and kind of run his hand through his hair, like, oh, what are we going to do? We've got the journalists from Paris Match that are coming in, and we put a pigeon seared on the plate with a beet juice reduction, and then a deep fried tempura of langoustine with a lemongrass butter on it on the same plate.
So how do you get from Pierre Gagnaire to your own restaurant? But what is unprecedented is an American chef owner, and how you did it and how you were accepted.
Well, you know, the one good thing from Pierre Gagnaire, I went to Gérard Boyer in Reims, which is a huge chateau in the Champagne region. And then Marc Menot of Vezelay called Boyer saying, hey, I need some guys. Is any of your guys, do you have anybody leaving? And nobody raised their hand. I said, I'll go work for the guy. And he says, well, I got this American kid who's worked everywhere. If you want him, and he says, bring him, you know. Plus, he's free. So I went and worked with Marc Menot, and that was my last, you know, the last stint. And I was looking actually to go back again, and Jean-Pierre says, Bob, go get a job. How many more restaurants can you do? It will not change now. If you haven't done, you haven't become who you're going to become, it's not going to happen. So I went back to L.A., and I was thinking, you know, what am I going to do? Here I've worked in all these great two- and three-star Michelin restaurants, cheese pastas, pizzas, you know, and that was the new hoopla, and I'm thinking, what do I do? And went back to Trump's. The chef said, hey, Bob, I've got a guy who just came here from Venezuela. He's looking for a young chef. He can, you know, kind of work around, and he's looking for a young guy. Gave me your name. Don't screw up. Next week, I was in Venezuela for a year in probably the prettiest kitchen of all the restaurants in France I worked. Spent a year there, invited Jean-Pierre to come there for the first, after a year, and we did Burgundy cuisine at its best. And he says, Bob, this is phenomenal. These guys are treating you like a god here. And but you know what? This isn't what you're all about. Some of my friends just bought Hotel de la Poste in Avalon, built in 1707. Churchill stayed there. Napoleon stayed there. He says, they've got two chefs. They both suck. I'm going to tell them to fire these guys and hire you. And a week later, I was in Burgundy at Hotel de la Poste in Avalon. First American, I guess, to actually run a restaurant there in France. And I spent 3 years there, met my wife, who was the bookkeeper there. And then 3 years later, they sold the place to a chef and his wife, which meant they didn't need me. And found a partner, and he says, Bob, just go find a place. And we bought this old Maison de Maître, which is, you know, like a not even the least bit of a chateau. It probably had four rooms in it. And it was just somebody's home, and we built a kitchen. 6 months later, we opened up with four tables in one room, four tables in another room, and we had our, 24 seats. And we did that for probably 2.5 years. So I went with him and worked with him for another 3 years as his chef de cuisine. My daughter came along, and I said, I can't raise my daughter here and try and work and do all this, so let's go back to the States. And that's where it all started back in the States. I had a headhunter call me up, and 12 years later, I'm still here in Charleston. And now doing You Cook with Chef Bob, so it's a full circle culinary route for me. So I'm a little bit different in the TV world now, but rather than teaching cooks, I'm teaching moms, daughters, dads, and uncles, I guess. So.
Well, I just have to talk a little bit about this, the French experience, and one of the things that you kind of, I think, towards the end of the story here, you kind of glossed over becoming a famous chef in France. As an American,
it's unprecedented. You're the first one to run a kitchen.
Is indeed unprecedented. Is exactly the word I was going to use. I mean, that's. I mean, again, I lived in France around that same time. I was in France for the summer of '85, and you know, people looked at me like, "Oh, you are American. Okay, so we take you to this place, so you have some real food for the first time in your life. You come with us." You know, and that was your.
Oh, believe me, there was some trying times, but you know, you shut up, you stand your ground, you sit in the corner, and then you know, you do what you can, and and most of the customers in my restaurant were from the 2 and 3 star Michelin chefs that I had worked for that were saying, "Where are you going? Are you going through? You got to go see Bob." The fact, and just like anyone, even now, people say, "Well, where should you go? Where should I send my kid?" I said, "Honestly, where do you live? St. Louis? Go find the best restaurant. Let your kid live at home with you, and let him go work for free with that chef. And at the end of 6 months, say, Chef, can you find me another job with another one of your buddies?" And he'll say, "Of course." If you're the first one in, the last one out, the cleanest kid, you're doing everything for him, and you're going to the market, and that's how you learn. It's tough, and I see these kids trying to make payments on these, you know, the culinary schools, and it's a tough thing. You get out, you're making $10 an hour.
You go to school
30 years ago.
You go to school for 4 years, and you're in debt. You're $200,000 in debt.
I don't understand. And you're qualified to do a $13 an hour job.
And you're making $18,000 a year.
Because you're not qualified to be a chef when you come out of culinary school. You're qualified for an entry-level position in the kitchen. It's funny. We interview people all the time. And we interviewed this one girl who wanted to be the pastry chef of Stage Left Restaurant. We've been around for 20 years. You know, our pastries aren't perfect, but we're 26 points Zagat rated New York Times 3-star restaurant. And this girl came out of culinary school, and she's like, "Well, you know, I want to make many thousands of dollars a year, and I want to be the pastry chef." And I was like, "Well, that's nice, and I'd like to fly to the moon, but I don't have a rocket, you know?" whereas if someone came to me and said, "Well, you know, here I have 10 years of experience working in these places, and this is what I've done, and this is who I've learned from," I'm like, okay. And it's funny because with that pastry chef who came from a very prestigious culinary school, we asked her to make some desserts. And I was like, this is from a hotel commissary kitchen.
Right,
you've learned
how
to make hotel desserts.
Right.
Congratulations. If I had room service, maybe. But, you know, it's – but I have to – your life path, though, is exemplary. And, you know, taking 3 years of working for free, that's a lot. But you know what? 2 to 4 years of culinary school – It's the same thing, and look at what you came out. I'm fascinated by your life story.
So I need to ask a question though, Bob. Do you think that the young people today are taking advantage of the things that you took advantage of, or do you think that there are fewer and fewer of those?
I'd say slim to none. Most of the kids now, and it's unfortunate, I'm going to talk down the TV, old TV scene, is kids get in, they want to be on TV.
Yeah.
They want to have their Brigard chef jackets, they want to have a title, they want to, you know, and no one wants to spend the time to learn how to cook, because most, you know, in 12 years at the Charleston Grill, I had 4 students for free every 11 weeks,
right.
four to six. That I said to them, I said, "Look, guys, you could get paid by other restaurants, I don't want to pay you. I want you to go through here thinking, I've got 11 weeks. I better learn something because I'm not getting paid."
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with more Chef Bob Wagner. We're going to talk more about the South and about Bob's new show, You Cook, which you'll see on PBS sometime soon. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis with Chef Bob Wagner. Bob's new show on PBS is You Cook. Your life story as to how you became the first American chef recognized in France in the many ways that you were is amazing. So, but you've come back to Charleston, and you spent how many years down at the Charleston Grill?
12 years.
12 years. And it's, you know, back in your home country of America, that was the place in Charleston and one of the preeminent southern restaurants.
Yeah, great spot and a great experience, a great timing too. I mean, it was one of those, it was a booming time and for the hotel. So, I mean, we did $25 million a year in food and beverage, not rooms, not anything else. You can imagine just huge revenue that let me play with whatever I wanted to. You know, banquets was a huge part of it, and we were kind of the diamond on the crown, and make people happy in the restaurant was my goal. You can imagine how.
How did your French experience translate to Southern, your cooking down south? And you talk a lot about Southern cooking, and beyond just ingredients, is there a different way that you cook down there?
Well, you know what? I don't think I'll ever get rid of the French that's in me. It was more of my play on Southern food, whereas there's very traditional, say, shrimp and grits or something like that, where you can get, you know, my first taste of grits were in some crummy hotel while we were looking for a home with my wife while we were down here, and it was like, man, that stuff's like wallpaper paste. I mean, yeah. What is that?
I'm surprised your wife didn't say. I'm surprised your wife didn't say when she had diner grits down south. Okay, going back to France.
Oh, I guarantee you, there was some definitely some tough times when it came to you know, finding product and those kind of things. My wife loves to cook too.
But it was more. Let me ask.
So my play would be cool. What's that?
I was gonna say. Let me ask you. So you found good grits. We use Anson Mills grits mostly in the restaurant. Yeah. When we use grits. You where do you get your grits from?
That's where I get them from.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they are. There's a bunch of guys doing them now, but I've always enjoyed Anson Mills, and they're just good people. And they're doing an amazing product.
And so, they're nothing like the box shelf stable grits that you'll find in. They're antebellum grits in an old antique grist mill. There's another one. There's a good one in if you're around our area called Cayuga, which is a New York State mill. And you know, the difference between grits and those grits, it's a different animal. You know.
No, it's night and day, and that's what came out of that was like, well, here, and you get with the locals and get with some of the other chefs and just learn what it is. I didn't know anything about the South. I was hoping they were wearing shoes down here when I got here, so it was, you know.
I just want to point out how Bob has acclimated himself to the South. I believe that in one of the shows you, however ironically, referred to the Civil War as the War of Northern Aggression. So I think you've adopted the South fairly well. I know it was tongue-in-cheek, but it was got a big laugh.
I'm glad you brought that up again on national radio.
Hey, you're on your national TV show. But let's talk
about... We just lost three cities, Bob. Just thank you very much.
Yeah, but you picked up a couple down South.
I was going to say, you're from the South. You're from the South. You should be used to losing cities.
That's great. That was really great. Now we're going to get burned to the ground. That's super. I love that.
So for me, I do veal sweetbreads with truffled stone ground grits. That was my plan. It's a real, truly French, you know, veal stock, truffle butter, you know. red wine reduction over roasted garlic stone ground grits with pancured sweetbreads over the top.
You
still very French in its way, but with Southern products and sort of my flair, something fun and you know, just kind of my play on Southern food, if you will.
You made me hungry for lunch. But, you know, we do want to talk about your show because I'm sure that you would like to promote it, and we'd like to send people to it because we're guests on it as well. We had a great deal of fun shooting it with you. But why don't you tell people about You Cook and what the concept is? Because there hasn't been a show quite like it around, and I think it's really suited to PBS. So talk to us about it.
It is. It's definitely it's a how-to program. And there was a side of me watching what's come on most of the TV shows now, and almost taking from what Julia Child used to do. But what I'll do with the whole concept with You Cook is I'll grab someone out of the audience and bring them up and walk them through an entire recipe, show them, you know, how to slice a sweet potato or how to you know, take the sinew off a veal tenderloin or fillet a yellowtail snapper. That, you know, when trying to find people that don't have a lot of cooking experience but are interested, and they, you know, everybody's got four dishes. Everyone's mom has four dishes that they do well. And if I can, I'll come out at the beginning of the show and I'll do a pan-seared diver scallop with a little diced fennel and a orange saffron butter sauce with a little puff pastry. All things you can go to your local supermarket this afternoon, buy, and come home and make for dinner tonight or for a little Valentine's or if your husband's boss is coming over, that kind of thing. Really trying to take people and show them some products that most people may not use on television and help them in a way, just hopefully that people are sitting at home going, well, that lady didn't know what the heck she was doing. She did pretty damn good.
What I think is great about your show is to tell people in our audience what you do is you pick someone from the audience, they come up, you put them in a chef coat, and then they actually do the assembly, which is, you know, I think for a lot of folks who, rather than following a recipe, there gets to that instruction where we, who are good cooks or in the business, you know, say, oh, julienne this, and you're like, well, what does julienne mean? You know, and you get to see them actually do it, you know?
You're right. We walk them through, and it's more finding ways of, here's a beef tenderloin. This is $9.95 a pound. Or here's these little beef tenderloin medallions that are $15.95 a pound. And all the butcher did was cut a little fat off the bottom and take off his silver skin, and that took 4 minutes. So if you got 10 people coming over the house, I'll save $50, you know, try and save money and explain to them how to do things. The big bonus for me is also we introduce wine and explain wine and pair wine without getting into ridiculously expensive bottles of wine.
And this brings me to the question, what the hell were we doing on your show, Bob? What were we doing there? It was nice. You fed me. I got some wine. What were we doing there?
And what's great about it is having guys, incredible restaurateurs like yourselves, who can voice an opinion and say, you know what, Bob, I probably wouldn't have went with the Sauvignon Blanc, but that was actually kind of cool. You surprised me on that one. But it is what it is, and most people don't know. And if you can hear it on a TV show with you guys explaining it or just bantering back and forth as we're preparing a dish, I think I'm a home owner hoping it makes it fun for people because it's something that I think a lot of people are intimidated by, especially in restaurants. And just letting them know, here's how you say it, here's how you do it, and here's some of the names you should look for.
If you want to find out more about Bob Wagner and watch You Cook, it airs on PBS stations on Sunday afternoons. You have to check your local PBS listings.
Here in New Jersey, it's on NJN on PBS, 12:30 on Sundays.
And it also often rebroadcasts during the week, depending on what market you're in. You can find out more about it at restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll link it to Bob's site. Hey, Bob, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Bob.
Love you guys. Thanks for having me, man.
Stick with us. We'll be back with the Restaurant Guys in just a moment on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys.
You know, Bob and I were in France around the same time. He and I lived in France. He was there for a long time.
Yeah, and I just want to go back to one thing that you were talking about. The French people are like, oh, you silly American, would take it to have some food, maybe some good food for the first time in your life. What people don't realize is you were imitating your own family.
That's not really true, but I will tell you that I was working in this factory for a very brief time until I was like, hey, I'm in France. Why am I working in a factory? I'm going to see stuff. But anyway, I was working in this factory. And so, you know, they make fun of the food. They say, ah, you stupid American. So they, we take you to lunch. We take you to the place across the street, the commissary type place across the street. We take you to lunch. You have some good food. So what are we having? Oh, today we have the steak haché. I'm like, okay, well, some steak haché. That looks like a hamburger. Wait a second. Just because you call it hash steak doesn't mean it's not still a hamburger.
So they brought you for a hamburger to show you good French food?
They weren't taking me for good French food. This was like the lunch place that you go and you have a bottle of wine and I got some steak haché. I was like, you just made the word prettier. That's all you did.
You just reminded me of the time that we were in Italy, and it was the first time or the second time we went to Vinitaly in the 90s, and we were at a club. You, me, and I was Jorge there at the time?
I'm sure he was.
And a mutual friend of ours, and we were at a club at night with some really beautiful, not super intelligent, though, girls who work for one of the wine importers, and they took us out dancing. And to Mark's wife, nothing happened. We just went out dancing. And
for those of you who would like to know how I dance, think Kevin James in Hitch. If you can remember that, make the pizza.
Yes, that's it. I've seen that. I didn't make the connection. What my favorite line with this girl, who really didn't have a lot of brilliant things to say all night long.
Clean the ear. She's throw it away.
So what, I don't know if you remember this, though. The girl said, and she had this, she was beautiful, and she had this, she spoke English with this Italian accent, and she said, and the song came on, and she said, oh, do you know this old Italian dancing song? It was Celebrate Good Times. Come on. In Italian. Old Italian dancing song. No, the Tarantelle is an old Italian dancing song. That is not an old Italian dancing song. It's funny. Anyway. Well, I hope you guys have enjoyed the hour as much as we have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We're the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.